Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome to a special podcast recorded at the Bristol Slapstick Festival. It's not quite the Rahalastapa format. It's me chatting to the brilliant Tim Vine about his comedy influences and his favourite comedy clips. The clips have been edited out of this audio version, as most of them won't make any sense. But if you want to see them, head to my YouTube channel, Herring1967, and you can view them all there, as because this was filmed as well. If you like this podcast, please do support us. We've got a new website, rahalastapa.co.uk. It's under construction at the moment, but that will be the portal to all sorts of fun stuff, and also if you become a monthly badger, you will get access there to all sorts of wonders, including those backstage interviews, monthly draws, special emails letting you know who the exciting guests are going to be. We've got a really good one for March the 18th, but I'm not telling you who it is yet. Do look at my Twitter feed. I think that one will sell out before next week. Come and see these podcasts live. Go to richherring.com/gigs. You can see the ones we've got in already. There's loads more about to be announced. But Warwick Arts Centre, another one in Brighton on the same night, due to popular demand, the second one being sold out. I think there's one in Wakefield that's up there as part of a festival. But there's loads more, believe me, about to get announced all around the country, mainly in the autumn, but some before the summer. So, richherring.com/gigs. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy this very funny podcast with Timothy Vine.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host this afternoon, Richard Herring.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Hello, Bristol. Lovely to be back again. I mean, I was just here this afternoon, so it's not been that long. I had a lovely time chatting to the goodies. I hope if you were there, you enjoyed that. It was good, wasn't it? This is going to be great too. I would just like to apologise to anyone who came to see this show because of the cover of Bristol Life. This guy is not turning up. Very handsome, isn't he? Look at that. I'm thinking of just wearing this around my face for. At one point, I must have looked something like that. Imagine that. Do you fancy me now, girls? It's all right, I'm 50. I'm 52 this year. It's all over. As is our guest, in fact, for tonight. So we'll crack straight on because we're going to hear about his comedy choices, his favourite clips. He's the king of the one-liners. He's probably best known for being Eric in Jetpack Willy. That's why we're all here today. But will you please welcome the incredible Tim Vine, ladies and gentlemen. on in. Come on in. Sit down.
Hello. Oh. Oh. I thought I'd do something visual at the top there. Oh, that's so nice, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Yes.
Lovely. And you haven't played the Bristol Old Vic. Oh, you've done...
No, I haven't. No, I've not played here, no.
Yes, it's a
looks nice. It looks like you've got a friendly face, sir. No, the guy on next to you, yeah.
So, look, we're going to talk to you about your favourite comedy, but we'll talk a little bit about... you first, before we crack into that.
And then you? Will we talk about you at all?
We can talk about me if you like. It's not so interesting for today. You until recently held the Guinness World Record for most jokes told in an hour.
Yeah, certainly. By recently, if you mean about 2012.
I do.
I don't know how long I held that for, because I held it for a bit.
Yeah.
And then someone else got it. I did 499 jokes in an hour, and then someone else... Was it 300?
No, it's 499.
And someone else got it in, I think, in Australia. And then someone went on a sort of campaign proving that this guy had, in fact, read it all or something.
Okay.
And he was stripped of the title. And so it briefly came back to me again.
Yeah.
And then it went to someone in India who told about 600 jokes.
Wow.
And I'm convinced that they didn't watch the... Because what you do is there wasn't... No one from the Guinness Book of Records was actually at the event. I mean, they're not stupid. But I did... so I did all the jokes, and you're supposed to film it and then send them the tape. And we had several different people counting, and we had about 10 people counting. They all came up with different numbers of what the jokes were.
Okay.
Because it's hard to know sometimes what where is the joke. For example, if I say, so I ate this chess set. It's horrible. I took it back to the shop. I said, "That's stalemate." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Checkmate." Now, that, from your response, is 1.5 jokes. But that could be seen as 2 jokes. Yeah. I always thought that was 1 joke, but actually it could be. So that, those sorts of grey areas. So as a result, 10 different numbers. So we went for one particular number. We said the lowest number that they had, which was 499. And we gave it to the Guinness Book of Records. And very quickly, they came back and said, yeah, 499. And I thought, they've not watched all of that. They watched about 12 minutes of that. I thought, yeah, let's just turn their word for it.
Was it gutting not to get 500, just that 499?
Well, it wasn't, because the previous record was 362.
Okay, that's pretty good.
So I, by someone whose name I've always remembered from Estonia, called Erki Kolu. And there's the name of a stand-up comedian, if ever I heard of one.
Yeah, well, he gets one straight away. We're just
exactly, yeah,
saying
yeah.
his name.
Yeah.
That's not fair. I'm very impressed with anyone who can write one-liners.
Write one-liners?
I do. I write about one a year, and then I feel quite happy, as you'll know if you've seen my 10-minute set. Because they come up a lot. In fact, I'll talk about it. I gave you a joke once. You gave me a joke once, which I use, and I think about it every time I go in.
Does it work still?
Yes, it does work. Whereas mine didn't work for you. It's because it was the joke I'd done for ages anyway. I think it was an old Lee and Herring joke, and I'll just do the do the bit. And it was just the setup, and you came and suggested a joke, which was Jerry Hall had some advice, girls, on how to keep your man. So that's going to be worth listening to. Prick up your ears, and then you said that's not the advice.
When I write rude stuff, I give it to someone else. Is that right?
It works. It really works. Whereas my joke, like this,
I wrote a joke,
yes, and I couldn't. It's not really my kind of thing. So I sent it to Tim, and this is as best I can remember it.
Right,
my great grandfather was a fishmonger. My grandfather was a fishmonger. My father was a fishmonger, and now I am a fishmonger. I guess I've inherited the selfish gene.
Oh, very good. Very good. And did I tell you that that was not didn't work?
You did. You said you tried it and it didn't work. And that's the first time I've tried it in front of an audience.
Well, I'll be honest. I sold it to Erki Kolu.
It's very hard to get the really good one. A, because everyone's trying to come up with one-liners as a comedian, so a lot of them are either derivative of something else or...
You shouldn't get hung up trying to write a good one.
Okay.
That's fatal.
Okay.
That's a very depressing place to be if you're with a pad of paper thinking, I've got to write a good one-liner. You can't do that. That's no way to live at all.
No.
You've got to say to yourself, I'm going to write 10 jokes.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to play darts for the other 9 hours of the day. But I mean, the thing about it is that if you write a joke and if you write 10 jokes and then you just try them all out, then, you know, maybe some of them might work and maybe some of them might not. I was talking to Milton Jones, I'm sure you know Milton Jones is a very good, excellent comedian and does one-liners not entirely unlike myself. And I was saying to him that actually, in a way, the truth is I don't know how to write a funny joke. And we're all like this, comics. We don't know how to write a funny joke.
Yeah.
Because if we did, we would do that every single time.
Yes.
What we do now to do is write a joke, a structure of a joke. And then the rest is kind of just, you know, it's up for grabs and you get surprised. That's one of the lovely things about writing new shows and stuff is that you try things out and something will totally surprise you.
Yeah.
Both ways, actually. You think, oh, I can't wait for this, and you tell it, and the audience go, nothing at all there. Right. Don't even realise where we're supposed to laugh at that. And then other ones, you'll get a really big laugh, and you think, ah, oh, great.
That and one do you find that comics help each other, as you helped me, and I failed to help you? Do you find deliberately almost trying to sabotage your career with my joke? do you find, because often it can just be the matter of a word, can't it? I've often got a joke in my set, and I'll do it. You know, I was doing a show for a couple of years, and then I suddenly just changed one word in the joke, and suddenly a joke I always thought was quite good got the response I thought it was not a significant word, really, but suddenly the joke worked. Yeah. Do you find that tinkering helps, or do you...
Yes, and sometimes I've told jokes literally the wrong way around. So I've been doing a joke where I thought I'd been doing the setup, then the punchline, and it's not been getting much, and then I've literally just told the whole thing the other way around, and then it's worked.
Yes. Okay.
and also in situations where it also hasn't worked. Yes. So all different combinations, you know.
Yeah. And you've won the Edinburgh Best Joke Award twice and come second twice, is that right? And they're good jokes, though. Do you remember which jokes won and which jokes didn't win?
Well, I don't remember the second ones because I'm not sure I don't know whether they have second place today, is that a...
They do have, well, yeah.
All oh, right.
They're good, the second place ones.
Oh, well, there's some very good jokes every year as I read them. But, so the first one was, I've just been on a once on a lifetime... I haven't done
not very good at telling jokes.
Tell jokes. just been on a once in a lifetime holiday. I'll tell you what, never again. Someone decided that was the best joke of the Edinburgh Fringe.
It's a good joke.
2010. And in 2014, I've decided to sell my Hoover. Well, it was just collecting dust.
And the second place one I liked was the one about watching DVDs with...
Well, you see, interestingly, it's funny you should say about that one. That one, and I had another one that was a second place one, which was multi-story car parks. Sorry, crime in multi-story car parks. That's wrong on so many different levels.
Yeah.
And... But I then discovered, as we do with wordplay, is it myself, Milton Jones, Stuart Francis, and some of us, that you have to keep an eye on each other's stuff a bit.
Yeah.
Or at least sometimes maybe you don't even want to keep an eye on each other's stuff because it's too uncomfortable to watch them, in case you go, oh, I've done that as well, and we have to have a conversation and I normally have to drop it or whatever. But that one, multi-story car park one, Stuart Francis was doing a different one that led to that.
Okay, yeah.
That punchline, so I stopped doing that.
Okay.
And the same with the back-to-back DVDs. Milton was doing something similar, so I stopped doing it as well. But remind me,
girlfriend watched four DVDs back-to-back. Luckily, I was the one facing the television.
That's it. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. They're classy, you know. And puns are often not very good and not very when real life, you know. I mean, people are
out of nowhere. Yeah, yeah. Yes, and often people tend to. I think there's sometimes people groan at puns, partly because they feel they've heard it before.
Yeah,
it's partly that because I mean, jokes mainly are about surprise. So, you know, so there's nothing wrong with puns per se.
No. I think when you can trick a comedian
maybe there is.
With the misdirection, there's the magician thing really with comedy, isn't it? You're misdirecting.
Yeah.
And I think when you can trick a comedian, which the guys you've mentioned, Booby Graffo, I think is fantastic. Misdirecting and even
absolutely.
One of my
early mentors, Booby
really?
Graffo. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, when I was working in an office in Croydon, the last time I had a normal job. Well, a job actually, and I was doing an open spot at the Comedy Store, and I did 5 minutes of my silly one-liners. And Boothby was there, and he said to his management company when he was about to do a tour of student unions that he'd like me to support him. And so that was the point at which I thought, all right, okay, I was offered these 30 gigs. Maybe I'll give up this office job that I don't really care that much about anyway. So that was kind of, you know, and watching him. The thing about Boothby, which is brilliant, was that he would always walk on stage as though he were walking back for the encore. There was this confidence about Boothby, which was just really wonderful to watch, because you just think, oh, he just would sort of swagger on, like he was coming back, having stormed it for an hour. But it was that how he started, you know, it was brilliant.
Yeah, that's interesting. It is, I mean, there's so much about confidence, even if you're playing low esteem character. That's not the right word. Low status character. You know, you need they need the confidence, especially if you're in low status, really, because people are more scared. I'm doing one now.
Well, you're right. And also doing lots of silly... But normally silly comedians are low status.
Yeah.
And you have to... But you're right. You have to. There has to be a certain amount of front in it.
Yeah.
So although it's very silly and sort of throwaway, you've got to look like you do believe it yourself.
Yeah.
Otherwise the audience won't. It's a little bit of a kind of tightrope. The audience, once they're all on board with the world of silly, then it's great. But, you know, if they think, I'm not going for this, then you're in trouble. Yeah. Then you really are just a bloke reading out words, and that's terrible.
So we're going to look at some of your favourite choices of comedy in lots of different fields.
Yes, and I just say on the subject of the because although these are the title is top comedy moments, they're not necessarily my top 10 favourite comedy moments ever. I say that because there's two sketches in which I'm in, and I don't want you to think. I don't want you to think that I've chosen these like the guy who went on Desert Island Disc and chose six of his own compositions. Yeah. So it's more that they mean something to me, I suppose.
Good.
Yeah.
I thought we'd start by me choosing...
And they are funny, hopefully.
Me choosing my favourite Tim Vine comedy moments.
Oh, okay.
We're not going to see these because I haven't prepped anyone with this. Right. There's a couple of years where our Edinburgh Fringe shows were back-to-back, weren't there?
Luckily I was the one facing the audience.
So I did see a lot of your Edinburgh shows, and I saw that one of the shows three or four times. It was very enjoyable. But my favourite Edinburgh moment of yours is when you did not come to the Edinburgh Fringe. No offence, but one of the greatest things that's ever happened to the Edinburgh Fringe, there was a year you didn't come to the Edinburgh Fringe, and there was a big billboard at the bottom of Cowgate, which everyone walks past at some point during the festival, and you... Mm. Booked that billboard for the entire run of the festival, put a massive poster of you going and saying, Tim Vine is not appearing at this year's Fringe. Yes. And however much that cost you, I'm sure it's less than the price of doing an Edinburgh show.
It was $4,000.
Was it? Much less than the cost of doing an Edinburgh show. Yeah. And got you, I'm sure, more work and more publicity than if you'd...
Well, it's... Yeah, I mean, it was a lot less work than getting a show together. And you are right. It's something that people mention to me more than, you know...
Yeah, it was fantastic. And it was one of those things you walk past it, you know, at least once a day, and it would make you laugh every day. And during the Edinburgh Fringe, that is a tonic as well, because everyone, especially comedians, are very depressed. And I think, especially during that time, and I think one of the greatest routines that anyone has ever done on stage, and I would ask you to do it now, but it might take some time, it is Pen Behind the Ear, which, if people haven't seen it, do Google it and do watch it. It's phenomenal. I've never actually seen it live.
Have you not?
No, I think I've only seen it on DVD.
And you know, you're setting it up as though we're now suddenly going to put the music. I haven't got the music. I haven't got a box of pens. You just have to imagine how great it could be.
It's a man throwing pens until one of them goes behind his ear.
Yeah, I throw, they sort of, you know, one eventually lands behind my ear.
Now, can I ask some behind-the-scenes questions about
you
this
can,
routine?
You
don't have to answer.
No.
Do you... You must have to deliberately miss for the first three or, you know, first 10 or 20 times, or has it ever happened that you've done it in one?
It's not quite as simple as deliberately missing. It's more that I know it doesn't matter too much if it doesn't land early. So there's not a lot of desperate trying. But the problem is the arm gets into a bit of a muscle memory, and when you find, you know, you might, it may land and then fall off, and it gets a big ooh from the audience, you know, and you think, oh, that's great, and then later on you're thinking, God, what'd I do for another one of those, you know. And you're there throwing these things, and they're sometimes you're not even close anymore. And then I sometimes get worried.
And what's the longest it's taken?
Well, the piece of music is 45 seconds long, and the longest I've done is 8 times around the music. But I know it sounds ridiculous, but it actually is the thing that takes the pressure off is knowing that I really am not going to walk away from this.
Right.
So that, in that sense, you feel like, well, it's good. It will happen eventually.
Yeah.
So if it will happen eventually, then what's to worry about?
I mean, it's 3 weeks.
Yeah. I think it was in Australia actually that the eight ones, because at the time the audience didn't really like me anyway, so it was compounded by the fact that he's doing something different from his terrible jokes now. He's throwing a pen at his head over and over again, and even when it landed, I think they really had enough of me.
Plus, you're upside down, so it must have been falling out all the time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, I enjoyed that.
How dare you groan at me when Tim Vine is on the stage. Right. So let's have those. Those are my two favourite. But I have to say, the gags that you do are phenomenal. And the songs and the one-man show, those old Edinburgh shows especially, were just very inventive and had a little team of gang, didn't you?
When did you last do? Because you stopped for a bit.
Frig, I'm 50, which was the same year we turned 50 in 2017.
Right. So I didn't do last year,
but I've only done one in the last four. But I'd done all the previous 11 or 12, and then
right, wow,
and then a couple of years. Well, there's a couple of years I missed at the beginning.
This back to back?
I think it was 90. 495s, that sort of
thing. 95. Yeah. I wasn't there 94.
Okay.
So
you were doing the lean. You were doing the lean.
Oh yeah, yeah. Lean. You got to lean to the left.
Yeah.
Etc. Yeah, but
that's why that didn't make my list of Tim Vine favourite. It was good though. You got to see in context. So let's start looking. I just see how we're doing for time.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
We're all right. It's okay. In fact, we've talked for too long. It's been joyful. Your first clip, and this is... Yes. I'm surprised to say this, because I'm a big fan of Peter Sellers, but I've not seen The Party, and this is...
Well, I thought we'd go straight in with something totally non-controversial. Peter Sellers blacked up as an Indian.
Yeah.
Not something that would be... that someone would do now, but Peter Sellers is... this film, apparently, The Party, is a very funny film. If you haven't seen The Party, it is absolutely brilliant. But apparently it was inspired by his love of silent films. Some of these things that I've chosen, I've had a little bit of in the back of my mind thinking this is a slapstick comedy festival, so I didn't want to choose 10 clips of stand-up. So his love of silent films made him want to do something like that sort of thing. And so apparently they worked out quite a lot of what went on in this film, which is basically this guy who ends up at a party that wasn't really invited to, Peter Sellers, and stuff happens, which is mainly him doing great sort of physical things. This always used to make me laugh as a child. It still makes me laugh now. It's simply a moment from that party.
Okay, shall we have let's have a look at the first clip. How exciting. Very good. Yeah, were you a big fan of Peter Sellers?
Very much so, yeah. And my dad, sadly I lost my dad last year. My dad was a very big influence on all my sort of comedy growing up and stuff. And we used to love the Pink Panther and Clouseau and A Shot in the Dark being a fantastic film as well, with lots of that physical stuff where it's really... You know, in the wrong hands, I suppose, it just wouldn't work. But him sort of, you know, falling over with snooker cues and stuff going on.
In Steve Martin's hands, it didn't work.
Well, Steve Martin, in The Jerk, it worked. But
Clouseau, didn't he?
Oh, I never saw that, actually. Oh. I never saw him do Bilko either, which may be also...
Yes, he did. He did make a little habit of treading on the graves of the greats.
I suppose so. You're saying
let's
this.
Let's not be mean. But
no, I loved Peter Sellers, yeah.
And it was interesting because that was, again, it feels like there wasn't as much content in those days for a young comedy fan that things came along and the Pink Panther films especially, which are more of our genre, were like a massive deal, weren't they? Did you go back and listen to the Goons and stuff as well?
I love the Goons. In fact, my dad used to often quote the Goons, three times world trouser champion and all that sort of thing. Harry Secombe and Spike Milligan, obviously. Just lots of that. Just that utter madness of craziness of the Goons and stuff. So that style of comedy, which, and the stuff from the Goons, that sort of sense of the comedy from the Goons is brought into the Pink Panther films by Peter Sellers to a degree. And, I also love all those clips from Middlebury Right in the Night when he'd be there with Diane Cannon and he'd be going, I want a room, and she's going, a room? And then she just finding him hilariously funny. She can't sort of, I can't do it. And he's going, no, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. It's just that whole thing of him just being hilariously funny and everyone just cracking up around him the whole time.
Yeah.
And he's a very funny man. He was a genius, wasn't he?
It was. Do you remember? It was one of the first times someone died that I was like, massively into. And I was we were quite young when he died. I guess you and I are born in the same year, as I've said.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I was on.
He was in a hotel, wasn't he?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was on holiday in France at the time, and I kind of.
What year was it?
Must have been the 8.
Anyone?
1980. Yeah, I was going to say early 80s. It was 1980.
1980. Was that not the same year that? Or was it? I was going to say, when was John Lennon?
John Lennon was also, what a year.
Yeah, blimey, crikey.
Ah, I thought this was a night of comedy.
Yeah. Who else died that year?
Hattie Jakes. Fuck, it was a terrible year.
I didn't even know we'd lost her. Well, she was great as well. Sykes. Oh God! I mean, this is why you can't really make a list of just 10 things. Generally, if you're a fan of comedy, you probably like most comedians.
Yeah.
I think that's probably if you're looking for the fun and stuff, it's probably most. It'd be a much shorter list to say Tim's least favourite.
Could have done that, but it's interesting because that's an interesting thing. Because I think for some comedy fans, your interests narrow, and then they say, I only like this person, and anyone else.
Well,
is terrible.
Maybe they do. Well, that's not me.
A lot of comedians are like that as well. I think a lot.
You
of
think?
Comedians,
oh, right. Yeah,
I think,
okay.
I'm a big fan of all kinds of comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's quite rare. Yeah. Because I think a lot of comedians don't like to, not a lot, but some don't like to other people getting the laughs or don't like to laugh at other people.
Well, listen, you go for it. don't they? You mean?
Well, I think,
they don't even like to watch
other
people.
They know so much about it that they sit there and sort of observe it and go, rather than laugh.
Well,
probably, but I'm a laugher, so I still enjoy.
Yeah, but do you know what? It's that funny thing on the circuit when you're doing loads of comedy clubs, isn't it? When you have that thing of, there are some acts where you just, you're always a punter watching them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You watch them and there's some. So your favourite ones, you watch them and you roar with laughter every time.
Yeah.
And then there are others you can see are brilliant and you appreciate what they do, but it doesn't tickle you in quite the same way. But the ones who you love, you think, oh, great, Noel James is on or whatever, whoever. And then you just laugh your head off,
Yeah, terrific. And so let's move on. This is a film I do know and I was quite obsessed with this film, presumably it's the same one, there might be two, but Top Secret, which is the Zucker brothers, is it after Airplane or just, was it the follow-up to Airplane?
Well, that's a very good question, and there'll be people who know the answer to that.
It was after Airplane, wasn't it?
Was it? Do you know what I think one of the main problems with this film is? I think in many ways it's better than Airplane. I think Top Secret is a really dull name for it.
Yeah.
I think they should have come up with a better name for the film, weirdly.
Yes. Well, I remember I saw this one with my brother, which is unusually.
I saw it with my brother as well. Yeah,
I saw it with my brother.
Yeah, with your brother.
Yeah, he loved it, it was a bit of an undiscovered gem, I think. And there's a lot of brilliant sight gags, especially in this.
Loads of great stuff, and the opening scene. Do you know the film Top Secret?
Of course,
great.
They do. Look at these dwarves.
The opening scene where there's a sort of Beach Boys style music video.
Yes,
and it's basically saying girls who like surfing and 12 bore. So it's like it shows all these girls running down a beach with rifles and they're shooting things while surfing. It's a slightly strange combination, but it's very funny. Where do you think that was filmed?
I do not know.
Anyone?
Western Supermare, they've gone very parochial here. Oh. That's the only bit of sea we know around here. I mean, it's an estuary really, but it's the closest we got.
If you've seen the film, I was hoping you would have guessed somewhere in America. But anyway, having said Western Supermare, it's no longer that interesting that it was filmed in Newquay. But anyhow, and it's the best bit of work. Believe it or not, the star is Val Kilmer.
Yes.
It's the best thing he ever did, in my view. He is brilliant in it. And Omar Sharif is in it. Very, very good in it as well. Hilarious. Peter Cushing's in it.
The guy who plays the sort of handsome guy from... Oh. Blonde guy is now... I bumped into him and he works as an agent for other actors now.
Who's that?
I can't remember his name, but, you know, he's a nice guy. Anyway... There's no time to tell you his name because we have to.
Right,
of course I know it. We have
anyway,
to look at.
You were right to talk about sight gags. As with Airplane, lots of brilliant sight gags. Yeah. This is full of lots and lots of. And this is a point at the film when I remember just being in, just fully into laughing at these sight gags, one or the other. And I think this is just so clever, this, and brilliant. I love the amount of work that has gone into this little visual trick.
Very good.
Yeah, so I remember, you know, the thing when Airplane first came out, which was the first of those type of films that I saw with Leslie Nielsen, and just all that, you know, Don't Call Me Shirley stuff. I just thought it was just completely up my alley, all of it. I just thought it was wonderful.
Incredible.
Fantastic.
Did you ever see Kentucky Fried Movie, which was a slightly...
No, I haven't.
It was more of a sketch thing. It was slightly saucy.
Right.
There was some.
I think I've seen the trailer.
Yeah, it was the first X film I ever saw. I saw it in a double bill in the Wells Odeon.
In what year would that be?
That would have been. I was too young to go.
I was going
to
say.
I was about 14.
Right.
It was a double bill with the other Cinderella, which was a softcore porn version of Cinderella. And my favourite...
Definitely two different lists of films people are making.
And my favourite thing... there was lots of favourite things about the other Cinderella, but watching it in Wells with probably like a scene in Life of Brian where everyone had gone and saying, yes, I'm over 18, I'm over 18. Right. So probably an audience of 15-year-olds at one point, just a voice at the back shouted out, "Pert nipples!" Which... So it stayed with me to this day. That's the main thing. But there's some good stuff in Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah, I must look out for that.
You have to do it. Do have a look. Those guys are incredible. And there's been so many sort of bad copies of Airplane or attempts to do Airplane and the Zucker Brothers stuff. Some of them by the Zucker Brothers or by themselves.
Yeah, and it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because films are supposed to be, I guess, you know, they've got to be an hour and a half. Kind of minimum or hour and 20 or something.
Yeah.
So at times, you know, it's a great skill to be able to make that sort of comedy have a story working as well.
Yes.
Because you could run out of steam quite quickly otherwise. But it really works in Top Secret and obviously in Airplane. I think it works in Airplane 2, but then slightly less in Airplane 2.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of those films you can dip in and watch 10 minutes of them, can't you?
Yeah,
But was it what ones things like Police Squad?
Yeah,
I didn't really.
Did you not? Oh, I love it. The TV series Police Squad was.
Oh, it's
was
Police
awesome.
Squad. Sorry. Yeah. Oh no, I completely loved
Naked
that.
Gun.
Brilliant. No, I was trying to think of the Police Academy.
Oh, Police Academy. Yeah.
Yeah, where they sort of were trying to do the kind of that sort of the jokey thing as well, but. But no, Police Squad. If you've not seen Police Squad, I mean, I'm sure you've seen all these things. But Police Squad is a fantastic series.
Well, they're dense with. I mean, I was talking to the goodies earlier, and I'm showing off. And their shows were dense with jokes. But I think that even more so, the Zucker Brothers stuff is so. You know, you can watch it 10 times and see new
things. See new things. Exactly that. Yeah. So they put little things in that they feel like, you know. You almost feel like it's just for them.
Yeah.
You think, oh, look at that there, and all that, you know, so, yeah.
Oh, I must watch Top Secret again. I've missed that. So,
Another one of my favourite lines from Top Secret is when he gets a call, the German commandant, and he goes, how is the prisoner? And he goes, well, let me know if there's any change in his condition. And he hangs up like that. And the bloke goes, how is he? He goes, he's dead.
So Sandy Powell is the next choice.
Yes. Now, I don't know an enormous amount about Sandy Powell, but I do love the... this is him doing a crappy kind of ventriloquist act. It's got a huge charm of I mean, he's an extremely funny man, but there's just something about this clip. I've always loved it. And I just think it's him. It's just, he's obviously got very funny bones. I think the woman in it is his wife in real life. Yeah, well, watch it. You'll see what I mean. It's very funny.
Let's see. Dad.
Now tell me. Tell me, my little man. How are you this evening? Must be all right in a minute. He says he's very well. So you're very well, are you? And tell me, have you any brothers and sisters? I've got three brothers and three sisters.
Here, I say, I saw your lips move there.
You mind your own business.
Well, I did. I was only saying.
My own flesh and blood. Now, don't interfere, please. Every man to his own trade. I'm talking to my little friend. Now, tell me, sonny, was your father a soldier? Oh, no. He was a little soldier.
Yes, I don't eat meat either.
And when he joined the army, I've been long since.
I said, I don't eat meat either.
Meat?
No.
We're not talking about meat. We're talking about his father.
Oh, no. Well, he said his father was a vegetarian.
No, no. What he said... What? Oh, I beg your pardon. I think I've given the game away. No, he said his father was a Presbyterian.
Oh, did he?
I'm nearer to him than you are.
Well, what's the difference between a vegetarian and a Presbyterian?
Well, a vegetarian, of course, they don't eat meat.
No.
But his father, a Presbyterian, that's his belief.
Oh, I see. And what are you?
I'm a ventriloquist.
That's your belief.
I love that she was just really laughing all the way through.
Yes,
that's like,
yeah,
just
yeah,
they were
yeah.
really enjoying themselves. I enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I keep meaning to look, see, you know, find out a bit more about Sandy Powell because I really don't know that much about him, really. But it's just very, very charming. He's just obviously a very funny man. I just love that sort of. It's. Is that being deliberately rubbish at something? And
yes.
You know, it's very charming, very, very funny.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Sandy Powell, so
there we are. Does anyone know anything about Sandy Powell?
I know he did a sketch with the ventriloquist dummy. That's
right.
I know that much about him.
Have you seen that new ventriloquist website? It's on gobbledygobbledygobbledygob.
Oh, dear.
Incidentally, when's there's this singing nun coming on? It says musical accompaniment, nun, it says here.
Oh, dearie me. Were you on Neighbours, Tim? Were you on Neighbours?
Was I on Neighbours?
Yeah, it says on Wikipedia you're on Neighbours.
Well, I had a cameo.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even a cameo, actually, because they didn't know who I was. So... It was a part where I was just outside Lassiter's asking directions.
Okay.
What happened was I was doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival and I said to my agent, as a bit of a joke actually, see if you can get me on Neighbours. And he knew someone who worked at Fremantle or something, which is connected to that. And because they got a call from Fremantle, I think they must have thought I was some sort of huge star that, you know, you must put him on, whoever this guy is. So they said, well, you know... You can either be doing your act in Lasseter's or you can ask directions. And I said, I'd like to ask directions, please.
Good.
Yeah. It was the moment my acting career peaked.
Yeah. Do a lot of acting. What generation of Neighbours also was that in the 2000s?
Oh, I didn't recognise anybody there. No. In fact, there were two people arguing about the newspaper. It was like they came out of this room going, well, I told you this and I did it. Yeah. In American accents, weirdly. And then I asked directions. So it's all very confusing. But it was sunny and it was magical. I thought, yeah. What am I doing here?
So they didn't know who you were. You didn't know who they were. No. It might not have even been Neighbours. It might just have been having an argument in a bar.
That's true, actually.
Let's look at your next clip, which is a Dean Martin roast.
Yes. Now, I love Dean Martin anyway, but this isn't really about Dean Martin. This is about a guy called Foster Brooks. I don't know whether you've seen Foster Brooks. But he basically... In a sense, he has one joke, and the joke is he's pretending to be drunk. But it is so, so funny. I mean, it's one of my favourite comedy clips. This would be in my top 10 ever funny clips. But I also love the whole glamour of the 70s thing. At one point, at the very end of the clip, you see Jack Klugman, he was Quincy, sitting there laughing. And throughout, you know... Dean Martin's there with a cigarette, you know, like this, laughing away, and I love that whole sort of the thing around it. But mostly, it's Foster Brooks who is just so, so funny, you know.
Okay, let's have a look at that one.
Our next speaker has never met Don Rickles. Boy, that's a lucky guy. But he asked especially if he could come here tonight just to pay tribute to him. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome Mr. Foster Brooks?
Thank you very much. As the Puerto Rican gentleman just told you. I have never met Don Rickles. In fact, he's probably wondering what I'm doing here. He has never even seen. He has never seen me before. He has never heard of me, and our paths have never crossed. However, Mr. Rickles, you and I do have an indirect relationship. You see, I'm fooling around with your wife. So you see, we do have something in common. I hope you understand, Don, that we have tried to keep this very, very discreet. So don't tell anybody, will you? My wife would be furious if she found out about it. Don, I really must compliment you on your spouse, Mrs. Pickles. I say that because she's a real dilly. And I must also admit you have a very lovely home. Incidentally, you're out of scotch. And if you happen to think of it, pick up some pretzels.
What'd he say?
I love that thing that it reminds me a bit of, although a totally different thing, Norman Collier, who I could have easily have chosen a clip from as well, sure. Who has the thing with the mic going off, you know, that thing, which is, you know, it's sort of one, it's such a clever thing, and it's, but it's one thing, but it's just, and I was lucky enough to do a gig with him once, and watch him doing that live, and it just, each time he does it, it doesn't get any less funny each time, so it's, you know, it's great having, if you've got something like that in your armoury, you could just keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Pen behind the ear, that's why, you could just be pen behind the ear guy, forget everything else.
Well, I mean, you have to remember that that's really, there's a big cheer at the end is partially relief.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So let's move on. Someone we both know and you've worked with, Jim Tavray.
Yeah, well, I chose this one partly for sentimental reasons. My dad thought this was a hilarious sketch, and I've thought it was hilarious as well, and still do. I am actually in this sketch myself. Just at the very end, I walk on as just the back of my head. But essentially, it's Jim running through ridiculous names for places. Sketches don't really need. Imagine a sketch show where someone had to introduce each sketch, which I'm doing.
The idea of this sketch.
Exactly, yeah. The idea of this sketch is, how to completely kill a moment.
So this is from the sketch show that you were in with Jim.
Yes, I was. It was called The Sketch Show, and it was on ITV. excuse me. I should have brought some pastels with me. I love painting.
You know, I suspect that he's been putting on the cough all the way through just so...
Well, no, actually, I have got some pastels with me, so I will...
Have a pastel during this clip.
Yes, that's a good idea. That's a better use of the time, I agree. but as I say, the sketch show was with myself, Lee Mack, who I eventually did Not Going Out With, Ronnie Ancona, and Karen Taylor, and Jim Tavray. So that was the five of us. And we did two series of it, and... It did very well in Australia, actually. It didn't do much over here. It sort of sank without a trace a bit. They moved it around a bit and then just went off. But it was I watched this and I remember that my dad loved this. And so it has that extra thing attached to it. But I think it's very funny.
Okay, let's have a look at Jim Tavray.
Just have the pastels.
Let's have a pastel, quick. It started.
Okay, we leave our camp here at Limpopo, following the Nanganga Road as far as the Talifu Bridge over the River Wampuli, where we'll cross into the village of Mustuto and be met by a Bonghee Hokan guide who will lead us through the Chaka Chaka Hee Hee Me jungle across Sembadi Bee Bar Darbadi, where we'll camp under the Puk Pukakik. May May tree, the outskirts of the Dengue Dongde Donga. At dawn next day, we take the Kakache High Kakahoodoo funeral trail as far as Poodadahode Furu Park, arriving at Farhe Bum Bum Ketateme Gorge at 1100 hours 30. You're late, Vine. Just for you. We leave our camp here. And here.
Lovely, lovely. Lovely Jim Tavray, who used to do an act with a double bass.
He did, if you remember. He was extremely... He was very well established on the comedy circuit. Probably when you and I started, yeah, he was one of the sixth formers in existence, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he was... and he was always did all the, you know, the big clubs, always stormed it, had a fantastic act with a double bass. I mean, now, this pastor is fantastic. I went to the sweet shop, by the way. I said, do you do Twix? He said, I'm quite good at juggling. But
it's better with a pastel in your mouth, that joke. You should always have a pastel in your mouth and do that one.
I said, can you give me some dark chocolate? He gave me a curly whirly and turned my lights off. Anyway, Jim now lives in Los Angeles, doesn't he? And I'm glad to say he's in good health now, because he was in a very bad car crash, wasn't he, last year or year before. So it's great that he's recovering and still doing it.
He's done a great show about... I haven't seen it, but I've heard some great reviews of it, and it's called From Deadpan to Bedpan, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he was a horrific car accident. He's very, very, very...
Terrible. He's very lucky. Very lucky. But we always had... me and Jim used to enjoy just hanging out with him anyway during the days of filming the sketch show. He's just a very funny person to hang around with.
Yeah.
He's very funny.
He's in Harry Potter.
Is he playing Harry Potter?
I want to say he's the bus conductor or bus driver. Anyone correct me on that?
Innkeeper.
Fuck you. It's good how few people person. Correct. He's just saying, no, that's Lenny Henry.
The innkeeper.
The innkeeper. He's the innkeeper at the Gobbledygook. I don't really like Harry Potter that much, I have to say, so I'm not that much into it. I played Harry Potter Trivial Pursuits with my wife and her family.
How did you
They all really like Harry Potter. I've never played Trivial Pursuit where I've done so badly. I literally knew nothing.
And you can have an entire Trivial Pursuit game on Harry Potter?
Yeah, you can.
Are there enough questions?
Well, apparently, and they're all insane.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't got any Harry Potter jokes, else this would be the moment.
It would be a great moment to do it. Want to make one up? Let's see you in action. Let's see how the. Let's see.
So, so I said to Harry Potter. Well, that's a good setup for it, isn't it? Give me a. I'll try and think of what to do next.
Have a think during this next clip. We're going to now go to Bilko.
Bilko.
Again,
I was raised on Bilko. My dad used to wake me at. There was a particular point when it was on BBC Two, I think, at about midnight, and he used to wake me up and say, we're going to watch Bilko. And I had this little black and white telly next to my bed, and he'd sit on the edge of the bed. I'd sort of prop myself up like that, and kind of, I think I would probably drift off a bit because it was quite, he'd woken me up. And he'd sit there and watch things. But I've always loved Bilko. I mean, there's so many episodes. There's still episodes I haven't seen, to be honest. I think there's 160 episodes, so I need to keep ploughing through the box set. But one of the most famous episodes, this one probably is helped by having a little bit of an explanation. When I did Slapstick Festival a few years ago, I did a whole thing about why I love Bilko, and we presented two episodes. And one of them was this episode where a monkey is accidentally enrolled into the US Army. So this is just a short clip from the process where the monkey is in the system and Bilko has realised it and is panicking, is trying to stop this monkey from becoming enrolled in the army, which obviously would be a disaster. He can't seem to get the whole process to stop. But anyway, you can see from this.
Have a look. And I knew more about Top Cat than Bilko. Top Cat was based on...
Well, Top Cat was based on Bilko, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it used to... excuse me. But it used to have the titles Boss Cat, didn't
it? Yes, it did.
That was extra confusing, wasn't it? It was. So it was Top Cat, and it was going, Boss Cat. As a child, you just, well, I guess this is the way they do things. And the whole thing was based on... And I think the guy playing Benny was actually the guy who played Doberman.
Oh, was it?
In Bilko, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, TC. Hey,
TC. That's
the other one. I can do him a bit better, but...
Hey, Sarge! Yeah!
And wasn't the Flintstones based on the Honeymooners? Is that the right? I never saw the Honeymooners.
Oh, I never saw the Honeymooners.
No.
No. And what
about
Scooby-Doo?
About that, non-comedy nerds? Oh, thanks.
Oh, okay.
Got one right, did I?
Who was in the Honeymooners?
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason.
And
Officer
Simon Harris, wasn't it? No, yes, good. Yeah, we didn't have it here, did we? So let's just check. I just wanted to see
how
sound
over time. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you've got a nice
1757. We're meant to be at 1758 for Larry Grayson.
All right, well, I can do a watch joke.
Okay.
I went to the watch shop. I said, I want to buy a watch. He said, analog. I said, no, just the watch. That applause started at the back of the room, then got further away. How does that work?
Larry Grayson.
Ah, now Larry Grayson. Let me. I wanted to include Larry Grayson because I think he is, despite the fact that he was a household name and hosted the Generation Game, I think he's very underrated as a comedian. When they used to do those, I was in one of those lists where they have top 100 comedians on Channel 4, and Larry Grayson was not in there at all. You know. And now I suppose you could argue maybe someone like Bruce Forsyth wasn't in there as well. But Bruce Forsyth is a comedian, but he's so much more than that as well. But I mean, Bruce Forsyth is a complete legend. He could be on this list as well. But what I love about Larry Grayson is it's just all the looks and stuff. You know.
I mean, I was worried about one of the goodies dying during the interview. I thought I was safe with the relatively young Tim Vine.
Sorry, everyone. He used to do lots of those kind of look like that, and then just go like that, and it was just totally hilarious, you know. And apparently, he used to come up with a lot of these non sequiturs that he'd say from when he was living in Diggs, and there was a shared phone outside where he was living, and he used to hear half of conversations.
Right.
And so he used to do things where he'd look at someone in the audience randomly and he'd go, "Thank you, mother, for the rabbit." Now, it was just very random. He obviously heard someone say something like that on one end of a phone. But I mean, when you, it's just the way he does it. Well, I found it quite hard to find a very specific part because there's so many bits. So it's not so much a comedy moment, although I just love Larry Grayson, but there's so much of his stuff I love, you know. So, I mean, how would you, it's a bit like with Tommy Cooper or something, how would you bring it down to just one moment, you know? It's in his act, in his hands, it's just all, it's Tommy Cooper,
yeah.
It's perfect, you know. So I love Larry Grayson.
Okay,
and here's a clip of him doing his thing.
Oh, dear, it wears me out, those steps. Oh, dear, I've gone all limp. How are you? I had a nice week. I still have to sit down. I've gone all giddy. You know. Well, I had a lovely week for a change, but last Friday, I was lying in bed, because I'm not an early riser, you know. And I was lying in bed, thinking to myself, I wonder when they'll revive the Maid of the Mountains, and I lay there. And then I thought, I'll get up and make myself a nice cup of tea and have a bit of Cracker Barrel. So I came downstairs and I sat there and about 10 minutes. And there's a knock on my knocker. Well, I wasn't expecting anyone. I said, come in. Well, it was Apricot Lil with her new teeth. So she couldn't speak for 2 minutes. And I said, sit down. And the rattling stopped. And she said, said, as Slack Alice approached you, I said, many times. She said, no, she said, about this new Keep Fit class. I said, I've never heard of it. Well, she's got a new, oh, dear. She said, place is alive. She said, now, why don't you go and have a do at it? She said, you know, as Slack said, you could do, you know, a bit of Keep Fit, so, well, you know me. I'll try, eh? I'll try anything once. Twice if I like it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a they've released on network DVD, they've released, he did a show called The Larry Grayson Show, and there's like two series of, I don't know, there's about 20 episodes there.
Right,
so. And he comes out at the beginning and does this sort of monologue thing at the beginning of each one. And I just love it. It's fantastic. Really, really. As I say, there's something, it's the whole rhythm of it. It's so original, that whole sort of, you know, he paints this little weird world and it's all very camp and it's just very, very funny. You know?
It's sort of bold as well, isn't it? Because there's those stand-ups who, you know, are ready with jokes, and those stand-ups that, in a way, if you saw that written down, you might go, wait.
Yeah, no, exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's and also, quite surreal. Well, and
the thing, as was with a lot of the comedians that we would have seen in the 70s, 70s particularly, but they're going into the 80s, was a lot of those people had been doing their acts for 25 years before they were properly given their own show on television. Now, I don't know about you, but I first went on television after about doing it for 2 years, which was really far too quick. But someone like Larry Grayson, his first TV appearance, he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
He had been doing this act for a very, very long time, and it was very finely honed. He knew that if you put a group of people in front of him, he knew exactly how to make them laugh.
Yeah.
You know, he would make them roar with laughter. So, you know, if you read the thing on the page, you might think, I'm not sure. Yeah. How does this, which is, you know, one of the problems with comedy a bit, isn't it? When you're trying to get things off the ground,
yes,
people look at them and go, well, they hear their own voices doing the joke.
Yeah.
And that never works.
Well, let's see, I think it's also interesting that, you know, and yes, similarly, me and Stu were on TV within sort of, we were 26 or 27. We'd been going for about 4 or 5 years.
Which is great, isn't it?
It's great, but also, I mean, but even now, it's even quicker than that for some people.
Yeah, well, it's also changed a bit now. It's very much a young person's thing, whereas in the past, I think it was, the comics were sort of 40s and 50s, weren't they? That was the age of comedians generally were that we saw on television. You know? And then it kind of got, with the alternative thing, people got younger, and I think it's getting younger and younger all the time now.
Yeah.
It's like dart players, they're getting better and better, aren't they? They're aged about 13, they're brilliant, aren't they?
It's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's sort of, I think that point you make about the experience and working out what you're going to do and work out who you are, because I think it does take a while to settle into yourself as a comedian, doesn't it, really, I think, and know your, and the persona is...
Yeah, because there's something slightly, I think there's something tragic about being a comedian, but when you get a bit older, I don't know, there's some extra layer in there, blimey, is he still doing it? You know, which sort of almost adds to the humour of it. You know?
Well, I think with me and Stuart, we worked through our 20s basically together and stopped when we were pretty much 30. And I think we both felt, even then, it'll be funny again if we start doing it when we're 60.
Mm.
And two men bickering at 60 is kind of funnier than two men bickering when they're 30, really.
Yeah,
I mean, it's Morecambe and Wise, whatever, but it's...
Well, maybe you should bring it back. Another 9 years.
It's not too far off. He'll never survive. He's never... Have you seen him? Who's going to go first? That's the question.
Well...
Can't wait to laugh.
Me, I think.
It might be you. Let's move on. It's another sketch show sketch.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, in this one, I'm in this one. But this is it was a sketch that Lee Matt wrote, and it's me and Lee, and we play wrestlers, and it was particularly based on that thing that we all was a received thing that wrestling was essentially fixed, and you know, it was all theatre and stuff. You know, but whereas, you know, in now we all know that. Whereas in the 70s, there was almost an argument about it, wasn't it? About where was, you know, people go, no, come on, it's all fixed. And some people go, no, it's not. No, it really isn't. You know, anyway, so that's the sketch is based around this. But it's I'm not saying it's one of the funniest things you've ever seen ever. But for me, I enjoy watching it, and it makes me laugh, and it reminds me of a happy time in my life.
Oh, excellent.
What the hell were you doing out there?
What do you mean?
almost get counted out in the fourth, and then you actually get counted out.
No, we didn't, you idiot.
Don't call me an idiot.
Or else what?
I'll smack you in the face.
Idiot.
Right. I warned you not to call me an idiot.
There's no need for that, you pillock.
Oh, pillock now, is it?
Yeah, pillock an idiot.
Right. Let that be a lesson to you.
I think you might have got away with not saying that was you in there. I think people might not have realised.
No, I had a luscious head of hair in those
days.
But yeah, so no, and Lee wrote a lot of things for the sketch show, and I wrote a few things as well. But and later on, when I was in Not Going Out, I mean, his sort of appetite for writing and just is incredible, and just the work that he does on Not Going Out. I mean, I always think to myself that he ought to have some sort of burnout, but he just keeps on going. He loves
he
it.
Does.
Yeah, yeah. Loves
did
it.
You see the live episode of Christmas?
Yes, I did, which I thought was brilliant. Yeah. And also, I felt genuinely nervous for them because I thought, wow, we are really. It felt like watching, and when you watch the first take on the night of a record, where you go, oh, yes, they've done it. Great, we've got that one, you know. But you think, well, actually, we're not going to. If it goes wrong, we're not going to stop. But it looked, yeah, I don't think I could have done that.
Could you have done the Element song live? That was a very brave.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
Brave moment. Great. So, this next clip is another hero of our generation, I think, which is Kenny Everett.
Yes.
Were you allowed to watch it? Because I wasn't really allowed to watch ITV to begin with. It was ITV to begin with, and then he skipped across the
As long as your parents weren't in the room for Hot Gossip.
Yeah.
I think generally you sort of got away with it. But it was the period of time that was beautiful about it was that there were, I don't know whether it was three channels or maybe four channels then, I'm not sure, but maybe just three then.
Three, I think.
So you go into school the following day, and your whole class, we'd all seen the same thing. We all had seen Kenny Everett the night before, you know. And it's that thing, I mean, Barry Cryer, of course, who's attached to the Slapstick Comedy Festival, was right in the midst of it all, and that's, you know, a wonderful thing because Kenny Everett was just brilliant. It's just such a joie de vivre, and I used to love the fact in the early series there wasn't sort of a laughter track or there wasn't even an audience as a big right. studio audience even. It was just like a group. It was like the crew, and you know, like they gathered round like 15 people.
Yeah.
And it was just that made it all the more real, and just it was just brilliant. I loved it.
Sure.
So again, there's so many. The trouble with the Kenny Everett thing, I think Network are releasing all the Kenny Everett shows, which will be great. And if they'd released that in time, I could have had a proper look and found something. But this is one of the sketches I remember.
Okay.
Yes.
Does it need any introduction? Let's not introduce it.
No, I know it's terrible.
Let it speak for itself.
Sketch introduction.
We'll talk about it afterwards and see what we thought. Let's have a look.
Sorry about that, sir. Just had to do the opening.
Well, get on with it.
Here's the first sketch.
Is that your first sketch?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the thing that he used to do with Sid Snot, if you remember, Sid Snot used to have the cigarettes and he'd try and throw them into his mouth.
Yes.
That's a bit, you know, probably, you know, would be something that would be, I would have received and somehow come back out again as pen behind the ear. You know, you know, that was, you know, it's just brilliant. He was, and also it was just very, very cool as well. It wasn't quite like the other comedy that we'd seen up till then. So it really, we all bought into it at the age we saw it, which would have been, I don't know, 11
and it's
or 12.
Interesting, I suppose the DJ background is it came from a different background than any of the other people who were working on telly at that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So he's in comedy.
Yeah, and so he was trying different things out visually and stuff as well. So it was, it was great.
And then Noel Edmonds took over the mantle of doing comedy on telly.
Did he? Oh, with Mr. Blobby and
stuff. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. I think I prefer Kenny Everett on balance.
I think if I could do that balance now, I would agree with you. Yes. I think Noel Edmonds would agree with you as well.
Yeah, I don't think he would. Right, well, let's move on. We've got Lauren Hardy, and you've chosen something from Toad in the Bowl.
Well, everybody loves Lauren Hardy, and this is a wonderful clip. I mean, again, you know, there's so many amazing clips. It's all warm and hilarious and funny, and I love them.
Okay, let's have a look. Very good. It's hard to top them.
I know it is.
It's such a perfect double act in that they're both so stupid, but there's a hierarchy to the stupidity.
Yeah, yeah. And you root for them and everything. It's just it has a great nostalgia with if you've been brought up watching all these things, it doesn't age either. Weirdly, it's still funny, even though it's black and white, and it's still.
Well, it's incredible. I think with comedy, it's very difficult. I think for comedy to survive through the ages.
So yeah, absolutely.
I mean, usually 10 years is enough to kill off a lot of things just as tastes change.
Yeah, so it's extraordinary. I know it. That's 80 or 90 years.
But it's some things do survive, but not very much. And often you'll look back at something and go, why did people think that was funny? I mean, I look back I look back a lot of that era of comedy, and you go, okay, it's not. There's a W.C. Fields film on earlier here, and you go, okay, it could have taken half an hour out of that quite comfortably. There's some great stuff in it. But, with Lauren and Hardy, it always feels kind of the freshness to it.
Yeah,
because
no, I agree.
Because it's the characters, I think.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
So have you seen Stan and Ollie yet, the Steve?
I haven't. I'm definitely going to go and see it. I've heard great things about it, and so I can't wait. Yeah, yeah. Have you all seen that?
Yes.
Oh. Thank you. There speaks the...
Lovely.
The voice of the audience.
No. Some of it filmed down here, of course.
Was it?
Yeah. I think it was here, or was it one of the other theatres? Yeah.
Was it?
We're very proud of it down here in Bristol.
Do you know, I said to my mum, I said, I want to buy a theatre. She said, are you having me on? I said, I'll give an audition, but I can't promise.
Oh, I'm glad you're here.
How are we doing for time?
We're all right. We're bang on. I mean, we could... It's eight... Well...
Oh, we are under, are we?
We were meant to just have started looking at that last clip. But I'm pretty pleased because we thought we'd come...
That clip there?
Yeah, 1817. Yeah. Lauren Hardy.
There's another one there.
We're going to chat for 5 minutes and then... hold on, the next one...
There is one more clip.
There is one more clip we've got to go through. And... Again, slightly arrogantly.
Is it slightly arrogantly? I'm in it. But it's more of a little tribute thing to my dad, really, because, as I say, I think for a lot of us boys, I think, get a lot of our first experiences of comedy from our dad being silly or showing us various things. And the first joke I was ever told in this world was told to me by my dad. And a show, I thought to myself, was filming a DVD, and I thought I'd bring him up and get him to retell that joke, and I could use it as a DVD extra.
Thinking. Yeah. It's heartwarming, but also commercial and economic.
Exactly,
value.
Well, both those things. But I mean, it's just my dad telling a joke, and seeing as he introduced me to Bilko and all these other things, I would say without my dad, I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't have the same sense of humour. So.
Okay. That's lovely. Let us have a look at Tim Vine's dad and Tim Vine.
Hey, I've got a good idea. Shall I get my dad up to tell a joke to you all?
Yeah!
What a great idea. Come on, that's a great idea. Right, that could be an extra. I filmed it once before, but it'd be fun to do it here. Let's hear it from my dad! Here he is! Oh, the stairs over there, here. Mr. Guy Vine, ladies and gentlemen, there he is. I can't move to the centre of the stage here. Right. The point about this is that my dad, the first joke I ever, ever heard was told to me by my dad, and he's now going to tell it to me, if you can remember it. Can you remember it? I didn't prime you. If I had told you this was coming up, you would have been a nervous wreck the entire evening. So here we go. This is the first joke I ever heard. He's keen.
There's three rather deaf old ladies going down the road.
Pardon, very good.
Very good. There's three rather deaf old ladies going down the road. The first one says, "It's windy today." The second one said, "No, it's not. It's Thursday." And the third one says, "So am I. Let's go and have a cup of tea."
He did it! Guy Vine! Oh, hang on. He wants to do the rest of his act.
Why I'm so fearful of doing that thing is if I start off, instead of saying, "It's windy today," I say, "It's Wednesday today," and it ruins the whole thing.
Oh, great. Well, that's good. Something good's come out of the encore. That'll be an extra.
Very nice. And presumably he spent your brother's youth ringing him up and espousing insane views to him so that he could become
Yes, that's right.
He does look like you.
He showed me Bilko, but he used to wake my brother up to watch the news.
He does look. He looks a lot like your brother.
He does look like my brother. But he was a very naturally funny man. Yeah. He used to, you know, when he walked past the sundial in the garden, he'd always look at it and go, "Is that my time?" Yeah. See, so he sort of had a natural sort of dry humour about him. And one, I'll just tell you one other thing. That one time I went into the kitchen and he was holding two things of yogurt, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I can't decide which one of these yogurts to have, the black cherry or the peach Melba." He said, "I know, I'll toss a coin." So he tossed a coin like that, and he looks at it and he went, "Oh, no, it's Peach Melba." So a very funny man. So, you know, I got my sense of humour from him.
I think it's nice. As a comedian and getting interested in comedy, I was interested in comedy straight away, and it was a lot to do with my grandfather, I think, who was very influenced by Chaplin, actually. Although looking at Laurel, I think my other granddad was very like Stan Laurel. But yeah, it's interesting how it's sort of embedded in. Do you think it's innate? Do you think you would have been a comedian regardless? I mean, you can't be there regardless of your father, because your father is white.
I don't think I would have. I there's no way of knowing, is there? But I think I would have been a different person, so. Probably I wouldn't have been a comedian.
It's difficult to say. But yeah, it's having that love of I think when I was talking to the Goodies, I just sort of remembered times when you were just all watching the Goodies as a family and all laughing, exactly. You know, and it doesn't happen very much anymore, I think, because families don't really watch things together anymore, do they?
No, well, I also remember my dad watching, and again, people who are aficionados will be able to tell me the answer to this, the Buster Keaton film where he's on a boat and the rudder breaks and he ends up steering with his bum in the water, and I can't think what it is, but I remember it was a Saturday afternoon, and my dad and I, I was about 10 or something, we just got some lunch, we stuck the telly on, and that was on. And I just remember my dad with a little tray of food, and he's just laughing. I like the fact that he was the sort of person who could turn on the telly, something was on, and within like 5 minutes, he's splitting his sides. You know, he had a very simple sort of approach to, he wasn't a worrier, my dad. So I just, that's those sorts of memories are great, you know.
Yeah. Great. Well, look, Tim, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thanks for battling through your...
Well, it's been really tough, but but we made it.
Fantastic choices and some stuff I knew and some stuff I didn't know, so thank you for introducing me to some new things.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to be getting your dad's, the DVD of the rest of your dad's act.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff there.
Watching that.
Guy Vine Live. It's quite short, but it's brilliant.
Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause to Tim Vine. How fantastic.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.